All right, we'll get underway here on the afternoon session of the April 2nd, 2018 Fish and Wildlife Commission meeting. And we are at agenda item number 3. So, Nate, I will turn it over to you, sir.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the commission. Nate Pamplin, Policy Director with the department. And for this afternoon, for this workshop on our 2017-19 operating budget proviso, we're going to divide it up into two main sections. The first is I've invited a panel presentation from our budget and policy advisory group, which was established this past fall to help us develop and review products that have been requested by the legislature as part of our organization assessment, our zero-based budgeting review, and the development of the long-term funding plan. And then the second portion after we go through the panel is Amy and I are going to ask you guys to come out of your seats again. We'll go over to the wall and we'll have another discussion about relative priorities on our budget based on the major outcome areas that we're using for the zero-based budget analysis. So,
do we get to fold paper again this time?
Unfortunately not. Not this time.
There goes the therapy session.
Yeah, yeah. But, well, we'll give you something else physical to get your frustration out. So for the panel today, want to introduce the panel members first. We have Fred Kuntz, who's the chair of our Wildlife Diversity Advisory Council and is a retired conservationist. Butch Smith, who is president of the Owako Charter Association and also a commissioner at the port there. Andy Marks, who's on the board with Coastal Conservation Association. Greg Mueller is executive director of the Washington Trollers Association. And Jen Surowitz, who's currently with the Audubon Society, but is taking a new role in early May with the Washington Wildlife Federation. So I'd like to turn it over to the panel and kick us off with Fred.
Good afternoon. It's a great privilege to be here and have the chance to speak with you today. If you bear with me, I want to take a few minutes and read some words about two of the draft first findings that our group has come up with. The first one is our committee work and the work of the department employees and your work as commissioners really begins with the mission to preserve, protect, and perpetuate fish, wildlife, and ecosystems while providing sustainable fish and wildlife recreation and commercial opportunities. In other words, we have a dual purpose. On one hand, ensuring the conservation of all Washington's native fish and wildlife, and on the other hand, providing for the consumptive, sustainable use and recreational enjoyment of our state fish and wildlife resources. When taken together, the scope of the department's work is extraordinarily wide and deep. I was reminded of this when reviewing your April Commission agenda. From Dungeness crab to grizzly bear to waterfowl to deer to elk to black bear to cougar to mountain goats to bighorn sheep to orca whales and on and on. And then there are the 268 species of conservation concern listed in our State Wildlife Action Plan needing greater attention. While protecting the species diversity and providing plentiful hunting and fishing opportunities for sportsmen can make for an exciting and satisfying agency personnel career, especially an essential link between species conservation and human quality of life is more broadly appreciated by the public. WDFW's work is more important than ever. Unfortunately, much of the public still thinks of the agency as fish and game. We need them to instead think of WDFW as the Department of Wildlife Conservation. Why do we conserve wildlife? At the turn of the 20th century, commercial hunting in the United States was devastating our game animals. For nearly a century, state wildlife agencies, conservation organizations, commercial fishers, and sportsmen have worked together to protect North American game animals and fish. But times have changed. Today and moving forward, WDFW and all state wildlife agencies in the U.S. must be more than just about hunting and fishing. The conservation and protection of biodiversity, endangered species, and all species is a necessary function of society at all levels of government if we are to build a sustainable world with a high quality of life for people. One challenge for Washington State is how to transition WDFW from an agency that historically was funded largely to manage wildlife for consumption and recreation to transition it to a new kind of wildlife agency that, without losing our traditional roles of hunting and recreation and commercial fishing, is focused more sharply on conserving non-consumptive wildlife as a key component of human health, economy, and quality of life. Meeting this challenge will require clear vision, informed leadership, managerial competence, and appropriate funding. This brings me to our second finding. The department's base budget is not enough to adequately serve the needs of Washingtonians now or into the future. The department has a serious and immediate structural budget problem to solve, but the inconvenient truth is that even larger deficits are coming if corrective action is not taken by the commission, department, governor, and state legislature. Averting these crises will require more forward-looking actions and a realization by our legislators that protecting wildlife is an essential business of the state and that all Washingtonians have a vested stake in wildlife conservation. We need to better engage the public in this understanding. The current structural shortfall in WDS budget has definable causes, including unfunded mandates from the legislature, 2008 budget cuts required by the legislature that were never restored, appropriations and license fees that have not kept up with inflation, and the growing co-management and Endangered Species Act's responsibilities. But again, long-term funding for all fish and wildlife programs needs to be increased substantially to fulfill the conservation mission of the department. We can hope for more federal funds, but is our future worth the gamble? More visionary long-range planning is needed. It would be a great mistake to focus only on solving the current structural budget shortfall. Rapid population growth will put further pressure on access to and use of public lands and on the survival of many of Washington's fish and wildlife species. Their survival equates to our children's prosperity. There is real urgency in the need to act to find a game-changer revenue source for the department. We must stop kicking the tin can down the road. It is too late for later. Now I'll turn it over to Butch to carry on with the next findings.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, Council, or Commission, excuse me. I've spent 8 days and had exactly about 7 hours in my own bed since I got back from the PFMC meeting, so I'm not quite as prepared as Fred was, but I agree with all what Fred says. We've got major funding issue problems in the state. From a perspective, when groups, be it sport or commercial or hunting groups, get mad at a one topic, a single topic, or at WDF&W, we find ourselves running over to across the street to the House and Senate, getting a couple sympathetic senators or representatives, and then all of a sudden we have no funding. And that might feel good at the time on that specific issue, but it bleeds the whole department, not just that particular issue. And I believe if by going forward, we're going to have to find some, and I'll just use the word, I'm sorry, piss-off-proof funding sources, meaning funding that doesn't come directly from licenses, funding that might come from a 15th or a 10th of percent sales tax or cost of living increase each year or every couple years on licenses that doesn't have rely on each year going across the street and trying to get increase in money, or doesn't rely on increasing license fees at a substantial rate where fishing groups or hunting groups or can glam onto it and either use it as another way to get memberships, use that as a membership drive on fighting the department. I've seen that a lot over the years by many groups. The system is broke, but we still need to maintain our hatcheries. We still need to buy land for access to hunting, and we still need to do the business of what the department does. And if we don't change the current system, if we don't reach out across the street, both, I believe, as a commission, a group of commissioners or a subcommittee, the director's office, and mend those fences that we have that are broken right now between the legislation and this department, it's going to be just a spiral downhill. And I think the group that I'm on, this group that all of us are on, have a cross the board users and non-consumptive users of the state. And even Andy and I have got along, agreed on a couple things, which is unusual. But this group has come together from all perspectives and really knuckled down and tackled these issues. And God, there's a lot of common ground, And we need to convey this common ground not only to you, but like I say, to across the street, over in the House and Senate, and that's going to take some heavy lifting by us all. And we're all guilty from time to time running across to our favorite representative center when we have an issue that we can't get across to WDF and W for what reason. And I'll give you an example what just happened on the Columbia River. You know, the salmon resource is down for many reasons this year, and so it was a struggle to form seasons in the ocean, Puget Sound, Columbia River. And there were some people that had some really good ideas on creative ideas how you could access more fish, but it took more intensive monitoring by the department. And the unfortunate realization that was not enough money. There was not enough, no extra money to do that. And so the same particular group at that time had that great idea, but it was the same particular group that was fighting the increase in licenses. And it really came to fruition when they were trying this, which was a good idea, would have given more access to fishing time and whatnot, and that's what we need on the fishing side. It couldn't happen because there wasn't enough funding to do that. So, you know, this stuff isn't free. And you know, the average sports fisherman or non-consumptive user doesn't see what our department does and doesn't see what they have to do just in the fishing side to have Puget Sound fisheries, to work with our co-managers, to make all the pieces fit that we have. There's no other state in the United States that has to do with what our Fish and Wildlife Department does. For example, we'll send 15 people down to approximately 15 people down to have our fishing seasons, be able to work with the tribes and the inside, outside, and all that stuff. Our staffs will be working till 2 in the morning. They won't go on dinner breaks. I've seen them bring in pizza to work through that. Just phenomenal. And other states, you know, California and Washington are in bed by 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock or have their own time. So that all costs money. And we need to get out of this. We need to get out of this where I'm mad at you, so I'm going to blow up the whole funding. And it's just not working. And it costs a lot of money. You know, if we're ever going to get out of this fishing issue, it's going to take some production dollars and a lot of different things to move forward. It's not all ocean conditions are what causing our issues we have today. So I'll finish with that, and I'll pass it on to Greg Mueller. Oh, I'm sorry, Andy Mark.
Good afternoon, and I want to add my thanks to you putting some time available for us to speak with you, Chairman Smith and Commissioners. I talked with Nate about making this presentation today and asked about prepared remarks, and together we decided that it might be better if I talked extemporaneously. When I do that, my passion tends to come out a little bit, and so I'm going to apologize in advance for that. Coming from this as a businessman, if half of your sources of funds came with restrictions and strings attached, you would not be able to run your business. If it were as simple as having a task to be executed and some funds allocated to execute that task, that would be fine, except that over time, some of those tasks have had their fund sources clipped. And so there are not only funded mandates, there are unfunded mandates, and every one of those is created based on what I have seen in the years I have worked with the department on various groups, advisor groups, and boards and boards, and also doing lobbying across the street in both the House and the Senate. Those dedicated funds, dedicated tasks, are ways to micromanage the department. And the commission has been accused in the past of micromanagement by the same people that have created the tools to micromanage the department. That doesn't pass the straight face test. I'm sorry. In order to accomplish or attempt to accomplish those goals, I'm going to make a basic assumption right here that that's a problem without a solution, that you cannot crack that nut. You cannot do business the way that the business is set up to be executed. And I think we're all saying different forms of the same thing. It just doesn't work. But when we pigeonhole resources for people who are doing their dead level best to manage a multi-million dollar corporation, you create inefficiencies. You restrict their ability to apply current management tools like lean management or agile management. The things that you want your people to be able to employ to bring their highest and best to work to accomplish the mission of the department. And the handcuffs are on so that they can't do that. And this isn't really apparent to the average layperson. And I would encourage you, if you haven't already, to dig in and do your homework on the morass of these dedicated funds and what this has created within the department. That's a big part of what's in this book, and what we've had to learn about. If you say it fast, it doesn't sound like much, but if you dig in a little bit below the surface, you start to begin to understand the kind of management nightmare that has been created. And there has been a need identified, I believe, in the Matrix report that the department needs to shift to a performance-based management model. Okay, and I agree with that. You need to be able to measure. You need to be able to work to a goal. You need to be able to plan. You need to be able to allocate resources. You need to be able to do basic budgeting. And if you don't know what your funds coming in are going to be, and strings are attached to half of what you've got now with no guarantee of funding to attain that, you cannot begin to achieve that goal of a management-based organization. Performance-based management organization. So there is a definite need to secure stable funding. Part of the I worked alongside Director Unsworth when he was here for a while and was present in some of the discussions with Senator Pearson, who chaired the Senate Natural Resources Committee at the time. And the statement was made somewhere along the line that that the department needed to spend down its fund reserve now, and we will fix this deficit later. Okay, I would really like to be able to call Senator Pearson and talk to him about that right now, but Senator Pearson's gone. Okay, and the fund reserve is gone. And the legislature finally did step up a little and put some general fund back in, but it was a small Band-Aid on a large cut. So if you're going to expect a multimillion dollar business to run effectively and to meet its mission, then somewhere some fundamental pieces have to get fixed. Stable funding is one, and get the handcuffs off so that your managers can manage and do their job. You've got good people. Tell them what you want them to do, but let them do it. Recognize broad public benefits from wildlife and fish conservation. I think this group is about as broadly a represented group as I have ever seen, at least I've ever participated in. And across the board, there is not a hair's breadth between the participants on the recognition that fish and wildlife resources are not just a consumptive entity that gets pulled off the shelf and used. There is a lot of value in having those resources available to a public that either wants to go out and look at them and experience them, or just wants to know that they're available. Okay, they don't have to get out and see them to have value. But here's the other piece. Some of those natural resources are indicator species for the health of our state and the health of Puget Sound. This agency is the agency that is charged with stewardship of monitoring, of collecting data, and managing those resources. And when we fail to do that, those indicator organisms begin a slide down that slippery slope. And if you think you got problems now, we start listing more and more species and come under ESA protection, that is yet another whack on the department's resources and their ability to manage. That's another unfunded mandate. We're dealing with that already. And the need to find more citizens to contribute to conservation. When resources are scarce, there is competition for those resources. Any legislator worth his salt will tell you that he does not want to have a food fight landed in his lap. And yet, through the actions of the legislator in providing funding for this department, they've created the exact kind of food fight that Butch was describing. Okay, and when people aren't happy, when they're getting the short, when they think they're getting the short end of a food fight, they go across the street and find a way to make their interests known. Then that polarizes. And instead of all of us working towards something that we all want, it bifurcates us. It takes away the support for the department and the department's necessary funds that they need to work properly. Plus, it fuels that appearance by the folks across the street that the department isn't doing what it's doing. Well, it isn't doing what it's supposed to do. The Matrix report said there is no smoking gun. There is no malfeasance. There is no mismanagement. But there is a structural deficit, and we absolutely believe that. So please, if I could leave you with one thought, do your homework on these dedicated funds and start to put the pieces together. And then when you send your staff across the street to talk with legislators, please consider showing up with them and show that the support of the commission is behind the staff to carry out its mission as charged and to get the support for them to do that. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman and members of the council, I too, like Butch, just got back yesterday afternoon late from a long week of council meetings in Portland. So I'm a little off the cuff, and that's okay, because at least I was given a subject I can speak on, and it's not like trigonometry or biochemistry. So I guess the best example of the unique challenges would have been this last council process, or PFMC process down in Portland, and having to work with very low numbers of fish, and having to work together. What's heaped on the state is not state mandated; it's federal mandated, and we spend most of our time in that process working on fitting numbers into federal NOAA fisheries management objectives and exploitation rates. The biggest problem with the hatchery program right now is, besides funding and the major cutback we had in 2008, which was 20%, and that was never backfilled, we're still not up to where we were in 2008, and that 20% has now become 35% through inflation. And the major problem with the hatcheries right now is, and I'm going to use the term wild fish fanatics, that even if we had the money to fund those hatcheries, they would not want those fish put in the water. And it's a real travesty in Puget Sound. If you do not have hatchery fish and you do not fund those hatcheries, you don't have anything. And lack of hatchery production leads to infighting, until people can see that we're fighting over crumbs, and that's not the problem. The problem is 160 million smolts taken out of production since 1992. We need a sustainable way to fund, and that sustainable way to fund is not through license fees, nor is it through commercial landing fees, because in a bad season you're not going to have enough money. And what's come to mind with myself, and maybe Butch, we've talked about this, is a portion of the sales tax, either dedicating a portion or raising the sales tax, and it would not have to be much. As far as this state has the most complex natural resource management of any state in the United States, and that is a byproduct of the Bolt decision, and I'm not blaming the Bolt decision, but it's a byproduct of that. We have three different entities. We have the tribal co-managers that have a right to the resource, and then you have the sport and commercial fishermen that have a privilege to the resource. And we have worked extremely hard, Butch and I, with the tribes on the coast, the Quinaults and the Macaws. And we can go to them and talk to them. They, in fact, did a major job in helping solve some problems on the coast in this last season setting. Appropriate funding, as far as the coast goes, if you do not have the fishing industry, you don't have anything. There is no Boeing, there is no Microsoft, there's nothing for people to fall back on. And being from Westport, our economy revolves around the charter industry, the sport industry to a smaller extent, and then commercial fishing. So all I have to say is that funding helps the state meet federal mandates. And without it, we don't have the mitigated hatcheries and the production we need to support our fishing industry. Thanks. I'm sorry, I wasn't a little better prepared, but it's been a long week, believe me.
You've done well, Greg.
Straight from the heart. Good afternoon. Good morning. Good afternoon. Afternoon. Thank you. And thank you for your time, Mr. Chairman Smith and the Commission. So we've heard these challenges. They're significant. They're real. They're happening now. But the positive side is we do think that there are solutions. We do believe that together that this can be solved. And you heard a couple of those solutions presented to you, right? Better strategic visioning, long-range planning, better outcome-based performance management that has measurables and metrics and things that that enable you to assign dollars more readily, more appropriately. I would also suggest, we would also suggest that new and expanded partnerships are going to be critical to your success. And I encourage you to think outside the box when it comes to the word new partnerships. Not just non-consumptive user, but non-users themselves, people that don't necessarily spend time in the outdoors yet. They still need clean water. They still need clean air. And the more and more people that move to this state, the more people that are crowding our trailheads. It's contagious. Outdoor people attract more outdoor people. I would encourage you to leverage those partnerships. Use them to help introduce your work. There is obviously a need to augment your brand, to elevate what your purpose is, and to showcase the impact that you have for all of Washingtonians' lives. It's almost really a marketing problem in some ways, which I'm sure you're well aware of. I think Butch referred to, no, it was Fred right off the bat. Fish and Game is the recognized branding, and that's simply not true. It's just not true. It's not the case. This appropriate, sustainable funding source that is dependable, and secure over time, no matter the political or the economic atmosphere, something tied to every Washingtonian, whether or not they recognize themselves as users yet. There is a full-hearted agreement on that front across this group. And I also want to second what Andy said about encouraging you to be leaders, for you to be champions out there in front of the legislature, in front of these communities. Be the voice for the department and showcase yourself in a new way that really gives that holistic view of who you actually are and everything that you do. So with that, I would say the last thing is, let's put a timeline on it. It's not going to happen overnight, but we can get this done within the next 5 to 10 years. We can be a sustainable organization, or agency. You can have that new marketing and that new branding and that new respect, and be successful because you have a full community, a full state behind you, people that recognize who you are and what you're doing and why you matter. I think that's going to be a critical component of getting the support that you need to help garner the funding that's mandated. I'm going to leave it at that. Thank you.
Mr. Chair,
want to
just open it up for questions?
Yeah. Let me kick it off, and I want to thank all of you. And TVW, I hope you make copies of this and send it to a lot of people across the street. I don't think I've heard more wisdom, except this morning, this group, shared amongst us. Thank you all. I've known most of you, not all of you, but most of you for a while, and the wisdom and the dedication that you brought forth it was spot on across the board. Fred and I were engaged in a broader dialogue of this a couple of years ago, and this is a good continuation of it. Echoing this morning's group, we had there's a group that reports to the commission, and it's the American Disabilities Act group, and they were sitting up there going through outstanding what they're doing. And talking about partnerships, they're representing
Well, three of the council members were wheelchair bound and talking about their hunting and fishing experiences, but veterans, you know, the whole ADA world, and also the world that those of us that have gray, that, you know, as I said this morning, unless we go under the ground, we're going to end up as one of the clients too. So new partnerships, you're spot on. We need help in identifying those people. Because, and as you guys said, this, it's a no-win game if we pit one against the other. It's just, and I've seen that for my years here, that one group, they don't like one decision, they go across the street. It's polarizing, it's defeating, and the common good is threatened. So I thank you all and encourage the continuation of this dialogue to, in whatever means we can, which again is TVW's responsibility. So play to the cameras. But I we need to get this message further out, what each one of you said. So thank you. And I'll turn it over to my colleagues. Yes.
I agree, and I'd second that as wholeheartedly as I can. This is absolutely incredible for me to sit here and hear all of you talk about reducing the conflict, maybe eradicating the conflict, and needing a game changer of a revenue source. I think all of you are astute enough to know that that is a difficult proposition across the street. But I also think, as someone who spent a long time over there, matter of fact, it was the conflict that made me want to come here, because I sat in innumerable caucuses and floor fights and thought, good God, this agency has to do something right. I know that there's something right out there, but all I heard was wrong. And so that is a kind of a culture, maybe a reputation that needs to change, but I also think it's changing. And I think that there is an enlightenment happening here that cannot be lost because the budget and policy group goes away, and that we can't lose. We've talked a lot about this in the last year. We are looking at ways we can contribute through governance principles, through better communication, meaning marketing, and just trying to figure out how we can get that message across. I think everybody here does work with their legislators, but my guess is are more than willing to do more. What I would ask, you guys are the ones with the associations. You've got a lot of people behind you, unlike us. If all of your association members start hearing this message and actually digesting it and believing it, that'll make it a lot easier on us as we go forward. I would love to hear, either as another panel like this or individually, and I bet you I'm talking for everybody else, specific suggestions. And I just want to say, I mean, the proviso was a bit of a smack from the legislature, but if this is what comes out of it, we are so far ahead. So thank you, Nate, and thanks to all of you and everybody else. I'll be at your meeting in May, so it'll be good to see you.
Other comments? Yes.
Good to see you guys again so soon. What I heard from you two, and I'm pointing out these Fisher guys, is that, Butch, I was really refreshing to hear you say we got to stop running over the other side of the street and complaining about one aspect or another, what the department or somebody else is doing. That's happened way too long. If we're going to have a future, you mentioned, you know, in the next 5 to 10 years, I don't have that long. We have to find a solution before then. I like to hear what you said, that there is no smoking gun. The Matrix report indicates that this department operates very well. They manage themselves properly. I also, one of the things that was encouraging to hear, and as Commissioner Baker referred to, you guys represent organizations that could give us a lot of power behind a potential solution, and I think it's time that we considered some kind of sales tax to stabilize the revenue stream that we all need, not just to maintain services, but to expand and do the job that the public expects us to do. As you've mentioned, what we do is to the benefit of everyone in this state through acquisition of public lands, through responsible management of harvestable resources, whether that's fish or timber, but also maintaining services that allow people to use the public lands that we all are stewards of. And as you say, maybe not yet, but maybe those parents whose children grow up, you know, that's what we're planning our futures for. And we cannot do an adequate job of that by just trying to maintain current services. I heard some things from you guys today that gave me some hope. I'm looking for solutions, and you've offered some, not only in terms of improving current behavior with the legislature, but also offering potential action that would provide consistent revenue stream into the future. That's what we need. I agree with that.
I'd like to maybe, just
sure, Andy.
Quick comments.
Sure. First of all, regarding this group, we were asked to commit to at least 2 years on the board, which is kind of a daunting task to bite off for a guy with a day job. But we all said yes, and so we're planning on being around for a while. The initial report from this group will not be issued until September. Is that correct? Okay. And one of the pieces of information that we have, one group of information that we've been provided, I don't know if it was in the Matrix report, if it was put together as background for this group, is benchmarking information on how other fish and wildlife resource agencies are funded in different models that are in place. That sales tax slice was not a unique idea or generated by us. That's coming from some other folks who have crossed that bridge. So I know Bruce or Butch wants to say something. So,
yes, Commissioner Graybill, I just like to add this. One thing I think the department hasn't done a good job of, or our legislators haven't recognized, is, you know, when you have hunting seasons and when you have fishing seasons, look at all the revenue it generates from people traveling to those towns all over our state. Just not fishing towns, but hunting people, you know, hotel, motel, restaurants. And so I think that's kind of where we're justifying, you know, they have hotel motel tax, they have all kinds of tax, and we do pay you know, for a license for doing a lot of that stuff, but we generate more in revenue by the amount of people traveling around the state and into this state than certainly, you know, those licenses do. So I think we have a good path forward and a good argument you know, a tenth of a percent or some small tax, permanent tax, could be go into the department. And the other thing I don't think people realize too is everybody has that nice elderly couple in the neighborhood that likes to feed the raccoons and those things, which you know, are not always such a good thing. But then here comes the big black bears, and those people, you know, God bless them. But you know, it becomes an issue, and those people might never buy a license of any kind. You know, they're just thinking they're doing the right thing. But you know, that costs money. It costs money. Now we have to go out and trap the bear. We have to remove the bears or the wildlife, and nobody thinks about the man hours it takes for WDFW enforcement and staff to do all that, and people forget that, and that's you know, that's an example of something that the Fish and Wildlife Department that does in this state but doesn't really receive any revenue for. And so it's much bigger than just people who, like has been said here, either go bird watching on state lands or fishing or hunting or whatever it might be, consumptive and non-consumptive. But everybody relies on the Fish and Wildlife Department in, the, in this great state. So I just want to add that.
Yeah.
Thank you, sir.
That's a good point.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and also thanks to all of you for all of your efforts here so far, and that will continue while you stay on the team for the 2 years. And thanks, Nate, for you and your staff for putting this together as well. And of your ideas, you know, we've been jotting down a lot of those. I hope we'll have a little bit more discussion about the idea of the commission being very visible as this moves forward past September and through the winter. Your idea of a small sales tax or a cost of living adjustment on fishing licenses to get it out of the microscope every year is an idea, and it, as you've spoken to, has got a lot of attractiveness to it. You know, not just those people that fish or hunt or enjoy the outdoors in a non-consumptive way, but all the rest of the people in the state that like living in Washington because it's got a lot of excellent environmental atmosphere to it. So when you think about broadening out that to everybody, you think about the sales tax. I imagine there's been every state agency who ever had an economic problem think of that'd be a good idea for them as well. I don't know about the cost of living avenue, if that's been tried before, but I just wondered in terms of a question for you, if you know if we have tried those two ideas before, and if they've failed, what was the reason for it? And it's such an attractive idea now being discussed. I just wonder if we learned from the past, what might we do differently? Or maybe it's never been tried. I don't know.
Yeah, Greg.
We tried the sales tax back when Jennifer Belcher was over in the Senate. And she shot it down. She didn't think that people that were not using WDFW's product would like paying for that. But like Butch pointed out, and I've used it many times, is that a guy that doesn't hunt and fish, a couple has a bear eating apples off their back out of their backyard tree. WDFW's manpower has to go out and take care of it, and it falls back on us. So as far as cost of living, I don't ever remember cost of living coming being tried. I know California has their licenses tied into the cost of living, but not here. The sales tax idea, it would have to be sold, but it wouldn't be something you just take over there and dump in front of them. The problem I have with the general fund relying on that is it's how the wind blows across the street. And so we need to make a push, and we need to either dedicate a part of the existing sales tax or increase it, and it would only have to be a percentage of one penny, and we would generate enough money to be sustainable. We have just one more thing before Andy gets the mic. We have extremely low numbers to be working with this year, both Chinook and Coho-wise, and the ocean in Puget Sound. A lot of Puget Sound's blacked out, won't have any openings at all, and the ocean is down to the bare minimum. And so you're not going to get much landing tax out of the commercial fishermen. And I would say license fees are probably going to slide off the other side of the hill and be down. So, okay, thank you.
From my perspective, the most important part is really to be rather dramatic. And I think we have to really make a push that we're doing something new. We're building a new kind of institution, a new kind of agency. That's why I think, you know, you almost need like a name change and a lot of publicity, because I think the key is we need to find a new audience of support. And that's really, sometimes you could call them non-consumptive user, but it's the general public. And increasingly, we're understanding that biodiversity, and we are in the sixth mass extinction crisis. You know, there's no use solving climate change, for example, if you don't have the biodiversity foundation that all life is built on. So we really need a dramatic step forward in rebuilding a new kind of vision. And again, we're not going to give up our traditional roles.
And, you know, it's nobody's fault, you know, that the world changed. It's not our fault. The fact is the world is changing, Washington State is changing, and people's relationship to nature must change. And there really has to be more proactive, coordinated natural resource management in the state, and that's by the government agencies have to be better coordinated, and the academia, business, we all have to work together in a much more coordinated fashion. I don't think you're ever going to get that sales tax unless we really make a dramatic new strategic plan, bring a new coalition, and really try to put Washington State on a national leadership perspective for saving biodiversity and tying it to climate change. And it's really about our children's future. It's about their health. It's about their economy, as Butch talked about. It's about, Brad called it at our meeting a year and a half ago, quality of life. But it's got to be dramatic. Otherwise, we're just going to keep kicking the tin can down the road. And we are in the midst of the sixth extinction crisis. It's too late for later. We can't put it off any longer. We need a dramatic action and a game changer on the revenue stream and a game changer on the paradigm of why we're saving biodiversity. And, you know, like it or not, all of us in this room are at the helm right now. And our children and grandchildren are depending on us. And I'm sorry, it's tough. It's not easy. But it's really up to us, and it's up to us now. Can't put it off any longer.
If I could just add a point or two. You asked if things had been tried. The sales tax, I don't know if it's been floated before. It wasn't since I've been involved. The idea of cost of living increases on the license, I believe, requires legislative authority, legislative sign-off to do that. And there was some discussion, I believe, about asking that the commission be relegated authority to make certain incremental changes without having to go in across the street and get holy water sprinkled on it. In my mind, that kind of sounds a little bit like the little boy who had a dog that had to have its tail docked, and he didn't want to get it, didn't want to hurt it, so he just cut it off a little bit at a time. But that's different folks' opinions. We haven't got to that discussion on within the group yet, but I think the staff has some ideas that that might be worth considering. But before we go forging ahead, I want to talk just a second about the perception of success and how that drives a recreational fishery. There has to be a certain expectation that you're going to have some success if, you know, in order for you to buy a license to put license the boat, put gas in it, and drive down to the coast or wherever and go out. And I know this because the year was 1962. My dad was stationed at Fort Lewis in the Cuban Missile Crisis. I was in the fourth grade, and he used to take us down to Westport. And I remember that sign on the arch, King Salmon Capital of the World. There were more Chinook salmon landed in Westport than in Alaska, British Columbia, California, and Oregon combined. And Westport was a destination fishery. At that time, there were more people going fishing in Washington than attended all of the professional sports teams' games in the entire state combined. And since that time, our population has more than tripled, and our participation in fishing has declined by more than half. Okay? And that's on us. That is absolutely on us. I want to echo the comments about urgency. This trajectory is not going in a good place, and we don't have the luxury of a great deal of time to fix it.
There was an Initiative 90 in 86, that attempted to put, I believe it was 1/8% of a sales tax on our sales tax, and it was 42%, I think.
The initiative failed.
39 to 61. 39. And this is the point I was going to try to make, is that it is urgent, but we do need time, a little bit of time anyway, because this will go to the ballot if this is a proposal. And that can't happen again.
Yeah, that's right. But it is decades later, and there are many other states that have since passed, and I think we can look for lessons learned. This is a different state, as was pointed out. You know, it's more complicated with the tribes, et cetera. But I do think it is a new era, and we should go for it again. But yes, thank you for the details that I missed there.
Yeah, I think I agree with what Andy or Greg said about the most difficult state. I, having lived in a bunch of them and worked in others, it's by far and away the most difficult and complex state to manage. I just, when you're thinking about going to the ballot, again, these polarization issues, I can see PETA, you know, just because of a hunting and fishing tax, you know, then the polarization. So how we bring this together, as Dr. Kuntz has said, that, you know, this, what the stuff that he wrote about, summation of a meeting that was a 2-day meeting, was very valuable to read. But I as soon as I saw that ballot, that number, I could just see the ads on TV, you know.
But what does give me hope is that, you know, I'm naive. This is my first time participating in something like this, but I know that there's red, purple, and blue around the table, and it's not relevant whatsoever. We are all here because we give a crap, and we really want the department to succeed, and we want funding for you guys. And I think we can be more successful in that messaging. I mean, you heard Butch today. You know, let's cut the crap. Let's work together.
No, you're absolutely right. It's not a partisan issue. It's a future. It's a grand
perception.
Grandkids issue. You know, but I just, you know, I want to be optimistic.
Really appreciate your thoughts. And I was sitting here trying to think of something dramatic like you were suggesting, and I thought, came to me, what if there were no hunting and fishing licenses? What if the tax applied to the privilege of living in a place that we have so much biodiversity and so many resources to use as you choose to use them, non-consumptive, consumptive, whatever, that's your choice, then we've also would have to transform the agency into something that people don't believe is just a hunting and fishing type of organization. And then maybe you could get complete buy-in, because it's not just hunters and fishermen saying, like, we support this agency, no one else does. No, it's all equal. There's no such thing as a hunting and fishing license anymore. Hunt if you want, fish if you want, watch if you want, hike if you want. But to live here, it's an incredible place with more diversity and things to do with wildlife and the fisheries, fresh fish, you know, at the grocery store. It's all because of where we live. And so there might be a tax that could be sold that way, you know, especially if hunters and fishermen weren't at the center of it. They're a part of it. That's their choice, how they choose to use the resources.
Well, and I agree with that statement. And I just, next 2 years, this department is going to be $30 million underfunded. And that's the big gorilla in the room, $15 million for each biennium. And we've got to tackle that issue. And what does that look like if we can't find some revenue, either raising licenses somewhat? You know, hopefully it's a combination of a couple things and not just all one. And I think we're at a time, like I think we've all said, is if you went back 20 years ago, there was no talk about non-consumptive users. There was no talk about buying property so you could go out and enjoy bird watching or whatever that enjoyment is, walking through mountain trails. But now that's very big and very real. And there's industries that have built up because of that industry. And so I think we are in a different time than we were in 1988. And I don't know if it's additional tax, sales tax, or just getting some from the existing tax. There's two ways to look at that. But I think, too, is, you know,
I work deeply within the department to create fishing seasons. I'm not a hunter, but there are hunters on this council that I sit in. But there's also some. We try to do a lot through the media, but you know, on the fishing side, there's issues why there's reasons why we can't fish as much as we want or where we want and when we want. That's not all caused by the department. We have ESA, you know, we have federal requirements that say we can't. We have co-manager issues that we have to get to and have reach agreement. And you know, there's probably departments in the state that have had directors for that will retire 30 years. We have directors that, if we're lucky, will last 5. Well, there's a reason for that. It is so diverse. You're dealing with 23 solvent nations. You're dealing with Canada, the great, I call it country sometimes, of Alaska, because I think they're a country, but the great state of Alaska. Inside, outside, there's no other state, and we tried it. We tried to bring someone in, and great guy. Great. The last director was a nice person, no doubt about that. But we see what happens when somebody doesn't understand. I mean, you can't even get somebody out of Oregon, really, that understands what issues, I mean, you know, that what issues we have and how to manage. That's how complex our system is. So it's not easy. And when you have that complexity, you have a lot of armchair quarterbacks. And that's what we have. And I guess the biggest, I guess, take that I could leave here with you guys is we all, and from the commission to the department to myself and everybody up here, have to do a better job in selling the people across the street in the governor's office that there's really no boogeyman in the closet. You know, we have issues that we can confront. You know, I've been married 36 years, and I can tell you there's been a time or two in that 36 years, well, I haven't been too happy. And I can tell you a time or two, a lot of times, my wife hasn't been happy. But we work those things out. And that's the same thing. It's kind of a marriage. It's kind of a marriage between across the street, with you guys being the policymakers in our department, issuing the policies that you give them. And so we all need to do a better job of coming together with all parties to try to make this thing work, or it will be in the same. We'll try to raise licenses up. You know, we haven't had a license increase since 2010. The one before that was 2008. You know, and we're looking at some, if we don't get some help from other funding sources, we're looking for some pretty good increases in license fees because we put it off so long. And if we can make it so it's not 25 or 30% license increases because we didn't do it for 2-3 years in a row, at infighting or whatever the reason is, and we can smooth it out. Just think if you could sell the legislator on this. If we had some continuing funding that we could count on, then they wouldn't have all the fighting that they have now by people running in there fighting with them for either funding or no funding. That might solve a lot of issues because there's nothing to fight over. It's, you know, it's not over there anymore. So that might make their life a lot easier. So anyway, thank you, and I'll relinquish the mic.
Just one brief final point. I agree with Barbara that we all realize, you know, the environmental issue is urgent, but the wheels of progress are slower. And I think the key is thinking out of the box like Jay just did, building the right coalition so that we have time to build it from the, and so we don't lose the ballot when it comes up. But I would urge you also, because Butch reminds us that, like we, like Nate over here, and Joe and Amy, they have a real problem in like 6 months to start preparing the budget for the next biennium. I would encourage you to start thinking now that what you're producing is a transitional plan. And, you know, we're not going to ramp up $100 million, you know, in a few months or even a few years. But we start to have a 10-year vision with a plan that includes building the coalition, includes knowing we're going to probably end up with something like a sales tax. And we take it and we can put the hopeful message out there then, especially to the non-consumptive users, that a new kind of institution is coming. And we got a plan that's transitioning. So I would start to consider yourself right now a transitional commission. Thank you very much.
Well, yeah, thanks, Mr. Chair. And just a huge thank you to Andy, Greg, Butch, Fred, and Jen for joining us this afternoon. We have hard jobs, and I can't tell you how rewarding it is to work with people that have this kind of energy and enthusiasm and candor. They tell us when we're screwing up. Heard it at several meetings. And they're also telling us where we need to work a lot harder and what we're doing well. And it's just incredibly inspiring working with this group, and thought it was really important for you all to hear from them. There are a number of other folks on our advisory group, a number of hunting organizations, the Association of Washington Business, Association of Counties, Land Trusts, WFPA, and while we couldn't have a panel of 20 folks, there's, as someone said, there is a ton of common ground that we found with this group. And when we kind of get through this initial surge of work products that we have to do for the proviso, we would want to work with this advisory group and thinking about some additional members that we want to have to kind of increase the scope and breadth and make sure we're not leaving anybody out, because I think that they're onto something. We do have a near-term task of resolving, setting up ourselves for our budget for next biennium, but also, you know, the legislature has asked us to provide a viable plan, a long-term funding plan, and it's been really fun to work with them on that. So,
would you please let the rest of the commission know when and where your next meeting is and what you're going to be doing there?
Yeah, thanks, Commissioner Baker. Our next meeting is on May 2nd. It's in Ellensburg. And at that meeting, we're going to be it's going to be a tough one. This is where we're going to show our carry forward level budget. We're going to be out $34 million next biennium. And this is where we've been really hard at work internally planning for that reduction. Now, that also comes with our solutions. And so we'll be coming up with our decision packages of what are the priority items to either buy back or new enhancements that we need in order to set ourselves up for success next biennium. So it'll be that meeting is when we'll have the first look at that budget publicly. We'll take the feedback from the advisory group and bring that to you as a draft in June to get your consideration, and then we're going to broaden it and take it more publicly through June and July and back to you for a final decision in August. So that's the May 2nd meeting, but also just a preview of what's coming up this summer.
Chairman, just another question on process, and there's been some great ideas here, and the idea of a transition thing, the concept of looking at a referendum. I'm not sure if that had already been in your thoughts or is somewhere in the reports, but I'm wondering about how that gets captured, and so that there is that kind of higher level strategy that seems very attractive right now. Maybe there's not just the ideas you guys have said earlier, or Jay's, or if there's further commission process for more thinking out of the box ideas like that. But the idea of you gave us a bridge before, we just like another couple bridges, and then we're going to go to this referendum thing, which here's the reasons why we think it's likely to pass. But anyway, that whole strategy, is that in your process now to have that written down so that it comes back again, maybe written down as a draft, and you all polish it up a little bit, but that it's there? And I'm not sure, Nate, whether or not you're expecting more discussion here at the front table about that kind of thing before you do it. And lastly, I want to say special thanks to the two gentlemen who ran the 8-day marathon down at the Pacific Council meeting and came here today. I forgot to mention that.
McIsaac, you know all about that, believe me.
Yeah. Grueling.
And Commissioner McIsaac, yes, we're identifying some potential funding mechanisms, funding options. The long-term funding plan does not identify all of the needs. It hasn't done the gap analysis. So we have a near-term product that we're having to develop because of the legislative proviso. But ideally, you know, if we were to put this in a particular sequence, I'd love to have done the strategic plan first. and then develop the long-term funding plan and what does it take to achieve that vision, and then go back through and then develop next biennium's budget. And unfortunately, our timelines are shuffled around because of the legislative processes and those hard deadlines that we don't get to change. And so we're bringing forward our budget and our long-term funding plan first, and then really what we're using this group for next, starting in September, October, is we'll be rolling up our sleeves and developing that strategic plan.
As part of that, looking down the future, I know you know these figures, Nate, but the AFWA figures in terms of when hunting participation drops off significantly, and that's age 70. So, that factored in to where our average age of a hunter is today, and fishing's not far behind that. And it's just also like when we were talking about the boat show a while back, roughly these are the times or the ages, but something like when they started to do the average age of the attendee at the boat show in 2000, it was 35, and last year was 56. So, that we're going down this path that we're going to fall off a cliff in terms of traditional revenue sources from hunting and fishing licenses, recreational.
So with that, thank you all so much for joining us this afternoon. And commissioners, I'd ask you to come on up to the wall, and we'll go to the second proviso.
Why don't we take 10 minutes before we do that?
Take 10